And welcome back to Coast AM. Ken Johnston with us this hour. We will take your phone calls with the maybe future Mars astronaut when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Ken Johnston with us. And Ken, much like the old show, This Is Your Life, I'm going to bring somebody in for you.
Okay.
Please sign in, sir.
Hey, Ken, you know that we've known each other almost 20 years?
No, I didn't really. That means that, we can be on Mars for at least 10 more teams.
Ken, do you know whose voice that is?
I certainly do.
Who is it?
How are you doing, Richard?
Hi there, Ken.
Richard Hoagland. There he is.
Hey, congratulations. Down from 200,000 plus to a little over 1,000. The trend curve is right.
Absolutely.
And I'm writing you in, Richard, to go, too.
Yeah, Robin was making a bet that you would do that.
Yes. Well, she's the one who coerced me to do it.
Oh, of course.
You know, if I had thought of that after my wife was signed me up, I should have gone ahead and signed Richard up.
I'll tell you what. I was going to go into a very long story with a punchline that would be kind of surprising, so I'll just jump to the punchline. I will meet you there. And the way we're going to do it is I'm going to take the fast train, and you're going to take the slow train.
Right.
Because we're not limited to rockets.
That's right.
The way I'm going to go to Mars and back in an afternoon.
So you're coming back.
Of course. And so is Ken. Let me interrupt my own, narrative here. There is no such thing as a one-way trip to Mars. This is a stunning PR move by some very shrewd guys in Amsterdam, because what this really is a political icebreaker. Remember when John Kennedy was discussing why we had to go to the moon in Apollo, and he used the analogy of the two Irish kids, and they come to a wall, and in fact, whoever, I forget who wrote the film 2012, actually had a scene where, what's his name, I forget the actor, throws his hat over the fence, and his son says, Dad, why did you do that? And he says, because now I have to go get it. When Ken and his group get to Mars, the political ice of this nation being stuck in a political paralysis of not being true to who we are will be broken, and there will be a stampede of people wanting to create the technology to bring them back, not up to and including the U.S. government. So there's no way that this is a one-way trip. That what it is a open-ended commitment to populate and inhabit and seize the frontier for the benefit of all mankind in ways that take human beings and make them, again, heroes, doing what human beings do best. And as someone who's known Ken for almost 20 years, I can't imagine a better representative, not only of our culture, but of our planetary culture, to do this.
Well, thank you very much.
But it's exciting, Richard, the whole thing.
Stunningly exciting. And the reason is, the second reason is, because we know it's there. Mars is not, in the words of Elton John, not the kind of place to raise your kids. There's the remains of a stunningly ancient and crucially important ancient civilization spread all over the planet.
But go to Cydonia, then.
And you want to go to Cydonia, A, because that's where the civilization once was, one representative of it, and B, it's at 41 north, so there's going to be water, so you can knock off two key commitments to guarantee that the Mars 1 expeditions go down in the history books. Ken, if you can get them to commit to resolving the question, were there once Martians? They will not only have no money funding worries again, they'll have no technological worries. Because again, the thing that Ken said early in the first hour, that it's not a matter of technology, it's a matter of political will, that is absolutely right. The Indians have just sent a mission, an unmanned mission to orbit Mars called MOM, Mission Orbiting Mars. Want to bet how much, or you want to guess how much that mission cost?
Less than what we're going to spend, I'll bet.
$68 $1,000.
Wow.
A typical NASA mission to go and do exactly the same thing, like $150, $200 million. So there are ways, even with governments, if you really want to do it much cheaper. So I really believe that the cost estimators who are looking at the technologies to put together, kind of like when Arthur Clarke and I walked down Fifth Avenue decades ago after the Apollo 11 landing and went into various stores looking to buy electronics that would allow us to put together our own satellite communication system to talk freely to Russia about a joint mission. Now you can almost pick up the technology to go to Mars by going to Radio Shack. Not quite, but almost. So the $6 billion figure compared to the $150 billion figure, to me, sounds about right. Again, it's all about political will. And what this enterprise is going to do, it's going to crack the political logjam, the ice, that is
one of the things that most people don't realize, and that is
we landed on the moon, and it's going to put these pioneers in an incredibly highly visible position with all the social media, with reality television, which is one of the ways that producers and organizers are intending to partially fund this. There will be no such thing as never seeing these folks again, and in fact, anybody who wants to come home at any point is going to have their pick of various mechanisms to come home, because there will be a land rush of all the private enterprise and other governments that are going to rush to Mars because they don't want these guys to have the only access to the incredible technologies that are waiting there for the first explorers to find them.
You know, Richard, a lot of people may not realize that there are over 7 countries that have plans in motion to go to Mars, such as India, Japan, Germany, Russia, Canada, the United States, Europe, and they're talking about getting Australia involved. So we're not we're not going to be there by ourselves for very long.
This is not a blue sky, crazy, off the wall, nutty idea. This is rapidly going to become mainstream, and I guarantee you, if you wanted to come home, this is not a one-way trip, because the politics are going to rush to get ahead of you once you guys are committed and serious and the world knows that this is going
to
happen.
Now, in the event, Richard, you do not have a chance to bid adieu to Ken Johnson, you might as well do it now.
You know, it's very similar to what I did the tour with the New Mexico Chamber of Commerce down at the spaceport, and they were telling me that they do tours for press that comes in from all over the world. And one of the biggest shocks they have is when they pull up in front of the big hangar and the support buildings, they get their cell phones out and they start dialing. And they say, "It's real. It's really happening. It's real. It's here." Well, so is Mars One.
Yeah.
We are here, and it's happening now that we're in phase two.
Well, the highest hurdle you're going to face is obviously going to be the medical. So you've got between now and March to get ready to pass all those tests.
And his age, Richard.
Yeah, but look at John Glenn. You know, Dan.
Yeah, but John Glenn went. He went up in the shuttle, came around, and he came back down.
You make that sound like it's the jaunt around the corner.
Well, yeah, but it's closer than Mars.
It's not the closeness. Remember, once you're in orbit, as Robert Heinlein said, you're halfway to anywhere. John Glenn flew to demonstrate exactly what Ken is demonstrating, that it's not a matter of age; it's a matter of willpower, the psychology, and the basic physiology of being able to handle the stresses.
I could pass the physical today.
Yeah, you know, the stresses of going into space today compared to when John first went up in the 60s in Mercury are nothing. The G-loads, the zero gravity, I presume the spacecraft will have some provision for artificial gravity.
It's not planned right now, but I fully expect that third stage that sends us on in towards Mars, if we can develop the tethered spin to create our artificial
gravity. That was done in Gemini.
I know.
40 years ago.
But right now it's not in the timeline. We're planning on going zero gravity for the whole seven and a half months.
Well, the problems that you run into there would affect actually younger kids much more than older folks like you.
Well, that's where we're looking. I think we're going to send the older ones there first, particularly with regards to reproduction, like those of us that aren't out there reproducing.
I love it. Well, Richard, we're going to figure this out. We're going to wrap things up here with you. But the best to you. Happy New Year. Talk to you soon, all right?
Happy New Year, everybody. And Ken, again, congratulations. You're on your way.
Thank you very much, Richard.
Richard C. Hoagland. And we're going to take your phone calls, by the way, with Ken Johnston here about his trip. Just, you know, sound off. Tell us how you feel about this person, possibilities of his one-way trip to Mars. No hesitation at all, Ken? None?
None at all. None at all.
Now, let's talk a little bit more about the landing spot. I think Cydonia may be a great area. Can you recommend that?
Well, I personally would recommend it because, well, politically, it solves a lot of things. And if there's nothing there, those that are saying that, they'll be happy that that. And if we do find stuff there, we'll be happy on that side. So it wouldn't be at all surprise me, but we have to wait and see what Mars One actually picks as our primary landing site.
Let me clear up a couple of quick things
that we talked about, the habitats. Every 2 years, we'll be landing there. So our habitats are going to double in size, and we're going to have more and more space. And then as we develop our technology on Mars to be able to produce the materials to make domes, then we're going to be able to plant trees and do all kinds of things under these domes. So it's going to grow substantially as we develop more.
The habitats, you said they're about like two rooms big?
No, two stories. And you're talking about, the last I saw, it was about 24 feet in diameter. So you take that and you
That's not very big. 24.
So there's plenty of room there to start with.
How many are you going to have?
Well, there's going to be, each team will come with two two-story type habitats.
And you, and how would they hook together?
Okay, with I've seen the drawings and the architecture on it, and there'll be connecting tubes between the two that you can walk ways that'll be pressurized the same as your habitat. So each time we have a new one, we'll all be hooked together, and we can walk from one end to the other. We'll have all kinds of extra space around. And you asked a question about people going crazy.
Yeah.
One of the things that they're going to be doing is monitoring us all the way, and one of the skills that each one of the four teams will have is someone that's trained in psychology to be able to recognize people that are
stress
having
or something.
Yep, separation syndrome from not being able to see the Earth anymore.
Will you be able to have television? Will they be able to pipe you satellite feeds and stuff?
We'll be able to have it piped up. The other thing we talked about, when Mars is on the same side as the Earth, about 22 minutes, if it's on the backside of the sun, we're talking about 22, and it's not just two, but 22 minutes, and we'll have a geosynchronous satellite to be able to bounce that signal off and get it back to Earth. So the further away they are, the longer it takes, the closer Mars is, the shorter the period of time. And we can have them, by having the broadband satellites in place, we'll be able to beam up from Earth. Probably the latest movies or what have you, we won't, and we'll record them, and we'll have them in our own little theaters.
Well, you know, with... We'd have to definitely do the interview with you and then edit, as you said, edit it together. We couldn't do it live. There'd be too much downtime waiting for you to answer. But
I think it'll be fun to try. I'm looking forward to it.
When you first land there and then you walk around on the Martian terrain, of course, we've seen what the rovers have sent back in terms of pictures. But for a human being to gaze over the horizon and just look around, what do you think it'll be like?
Well, I think, first of all, one of the things that we're going to notice, here on Earth, we think of our horizon as just a flat plane. However, with Mars being substantially smaller than the Earth, you'll actually be able to see the curvature 5 miles away. So that's going to be one of the first things. Judging distance will be something we'll have to get used to, because we don't have anything to compare it with, no trees, no houses, buildings, or what have you. But we see a huge boulder, or is it a mountain a little bit further away? But if it's over 5 miles, you're going to start seeing it dropping off below the curvature of the planet. So there'll be some exciting things to get used to.
There sure will be.
I'll be, let's see, I'm 33.6 Martian years old right now, so that lets you know I'm still ready to go.
Will there be any foreigners there, or are these all Americans?
No, this is worldwide. As I said earlier, there were 140 countries that had applicants that signed up.
But so they're going to pick people from all over the place.
Every team is supposed to be a international team. The English has been chosen to be the primary communication language and everything else. Although during the period of training, once we know who our teammates are, we may well want to study some of the other languages just for chit chat and friendly conversation with, other than the technical stuff. And we'll have every team will have to have people cross trained. You'll have a primary electrician, you'll have a backup, you'll have a primary communications, you'll have a primary doctor, you'll have backups, and we'll cross-train in each other. In case someone gets sick, we'll have someone to be able to pick up the load if we have a problem. So it's very well thought out. We've got some great brains working with us to pre-plan everything, so hopefully they won't miss something and forget to put the screwdriver in the toolbox that we need.
So what do you think the odds are of you surviving the next cut?
The next round?
Yeah.
About 1 out of 580.
That's not.
I bought a lotto ticket tonight that's over like 17 million to 1. So my chances are pretty good.
Now, do you anticipate any problems there once you're there? Besides the emotional one, of course, that everybody will go through.
I'm sure there's going to be a little bit. We'll have already spent 7.5 months in transit. So we will probably have come across a lot of those same psychological setbacks and problems. But once we get on Mars and we have our own planet, so to speak, and we're thinking in terms of being the first Martians, and we get to get outside of our habitat, walk around, and sort of not claim it, but then become one with Mars, I think it'll go a lot easier. And then night, we'll get used to looking up and saying, you look at that little blue marble that's coming up over the horizon. That's Earth. That's where we're from.
Okay, let's go to Jeff in Cleveland, Ohio. Welcome to the program, Jeff. Go ahead.
Hey, George. Hi, Ken. How you doing?
Hey, Jeff. Good.
Doing just great.
There's been a question that has been bugging me since I first heard about any manned missions to Mars. In your training regimen, how are you going to be able to compensate for Earth gravity and air pressure?
Got about a minute to go here, Ken, before the break.
Okay, air pressure-wise, when we do our training inside our habitats, we're going to be simulating some of the same difference in the pressure outside. We'll have to maintain a little higher pressure inside to be equivalent to what we would do on Mars with respect to what the Mars atmosphere is concerned. Zero gravity, as I've trained before in both the KC-135s or the newer one they have, as well as neutral buoyancy underwater, we'll do a lot of that training to simulate what it would be like to learn. And as I said earlier, I hope we'll be able to set up a spin on the trans-Martian coast all the way up to Mars to simulate one-third Earth gravity. So by the time we land, we'll be accustomed to that lesser gravity.
We're going to come back in a moment. We're going to take final phone calls with Ken Johnston, who wants to go to Mars. Why don't you throw in your 2 cents and let us know what you think about that or any questions that you might have. I'm George Norrie. And we will be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, just imagine for a moment that there is no afterlife. That's what we're going to talk about. And by the way, we talk a lot about things like that on our television program, Beyond Belief. Please take a moment and watch it, 10 days free. You can also watch all the other strange videos there. Marianne Winkowski, the ghost hunter, she'll be out there too. So just go to this website, beyondbelief.com. Ken, is there a selection committee to pick the astronauts? How will that be done?
Well, actually, the selection committee's already been involved, and that was breaking it down from the 202,000 down to the 1058 that we have now. The next phase will be, after we get our physicals all turned in by March the 8th, then the selection committee is going to have direct interviews at each one of the regions around the world to have face-to-face meetings with us. And after that, I'm sure they'll get together and make their decisions.
Can you go to a doctor of your choice for the physical, or do you have to go to a designated doctor?
No, it's up to us to get a hold of our own doctors. We have the complete list of all of the examinations that are required. And then the doctor has to sign a statement in checking off and in signing off that we meet all of these requirements. And then that is sent in along with his credentials. Seeing as how the HIPAA law says it's very private, a lot of our physical tests and exams, but I suppose if someone really wanted to check it, they with the selection committee, we could sign a waiver and they would be able to look at in detail. If we were like on the borderline, they might want to take a look at it.
Are you allowed to take pharmaceutical prescriptions with you or not?
That hasn't been discussed. Hopefully, we're all going to be in good enough shape. I don't take any pharmaceutical.
Nothing. Okay.
Healthy enough.
All right, let's go to Jimmy in St. Louis to get things going on the wild card line. Hello, Jimmy.
Hey, my favorite George. How are you?
I'm fine. It's been a while. Good to hear from you.
Good to hear you. Always. My question's pretty simple. How long is he going to be self-sustained in Mars?
Well, that's a good question. How long can you be self-sustained, Kenny?
Well, that's the whole thing. When we get there, we'll have sufficient food supplies to hold us until we can have our greenhouses up and going, until we can become self-sufficient. So between the first landing and 2 years later, the second landing, we should have our greenhouses up and going good and be reaching the point of nearly self-sufficiency.
Next up, Buck is in Limestone, West Virginia. Hey, Buck, take it away.
Hey, George, thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I have a question for Ken. Imagine you'll have an exhaustive list of medical supplies. Do you know, Ken, is there any plans on taking medical marijuana to Mars?
Uh-huh. Interesting question.
I wouldn't be surprised if it was legalized. We could take about any type of pharmaceutical things with us. So I haven't discussed that one yet. But right here just north of New Mexico, we have Colorado, and they're already approving it.
So you're going to have a greenhouse there, right? So you're going to grow things?
Absolutely.
What are you going to grow?
Well, I haven't seen a breakdown of it, but mostly they're going to be vegetables and things that can be farmed and grown. We'll be growing them primarily in hydroponic-type greenhouses.
Explain what a day would consist of, Ken.
Wow. I haven't seen a schedule, but I'm sure it's going to be up and breakfast and get ready and go, because the greenhouses mostly should be directly accessible from our habitat and have the same type of atmosphere. We may change the atmosphere a little bit inside the greenhouses to be a little more carbon dioxide, because plants take in carbon dioxide and they put oxygen back into the atmosphere.
See, I think there's a factor here that nobody really has put into effect yet, and that is the boredom factor. I mean, after the excitement of landing and walking around a little bit out there in your spacesuits, the monotony kicks in. I don't think the human mind can handle that.
Well, it's not going to be that much boring, because we're going to have team members that are trained in geology, archaeology, and being able to, we're going to go out on into the Martian area, and we'll be picking up rocks, and we'll be bringing them back. We'll be doing scientific experiments and things tied in with the scientists on the Earth. So we're going to be in constant contact with the Earth and scientists here. They'll be coming up with experiments they want us to run and do and to check. So we're going to be extremely busy doing real scientific work as well as farming.
Think you'll see any UFOs out there?
I hope so, be honest with you.
Absolutely. Well, you've been kind of a rogue yourself in your career, so you still have a good relationship with NASA?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, I have a great relationship with them, but then
they're not doing this mission.
With the bureaucracy, you're going to wind up with those that don't particularly like your position on things. But my attitude has always been, so long as you tell the truth, you don't have to worry about what you said to somebody else.
And this is going to be a private enterprise, isn't it?
That is correct. We factor that they're very strong on not having any government to have any control over what we do.
Can the government nix this project?
No. The only thing that can nix it would be the space treaty signed by most of the countries on the planet, and those that are the most advanced are going to be sure that we can meet certain requirements. But that's what our founders and things have to work out, the treaties, to be sure that it's approved, that we can launch. You know, you've got the FAA involved in every flight that goes on. We've got to be sure that we're going to meet those requirements before we lift off. And those things are being worked out here as we speak, as a matter of fact.
So you can't get to Mars and claim that you own 5,000 acres?
No, not yet. But those are one of the things that we're going to have to come up with when we make our laws and things as to what areas that are going to be belonging to our Martian government, or what areas can be considered our private property.
east of the Rockies. Randy in Abington, Virginia, you're on with Ken Johnston. Go ahead, Randy.
I think that going to Mars is really a bad idea because of the great dangers that you could encounter. For one, there's no atmosphere, and if meteors come toward you, there's no atmosphere to, you know, to make them burn up. Second, you're going to be getting the intense gamma rays from the sun. And third, because it's so far from the sun, it's going to be extremely cold. I mean, it's unimaginable.
Well, during in some areas on Mars, and during the summer period, the temperature can get up as high as 70 degrees Fahrenheit, to be honest with you. And, of course, at nighttime, it's going to drop down to nearly a minus 200. But the radiation, because we'll have our habitats covered with at least a meter or two of soil, that'll block off any of the solar radiations and they come in on us. And so even the 7.5-month transit for between the Earth and Mars, in the event, such as we've got this big solar flare taking place right now heading towards the Earth, will be, if they don't move as fast as the speed of light, so we're going to be able to detect that we have a flare coming our way, and we'll be able to go into inside of the tanks that hold all of our waters. There will be a habitat area that we can stay in there until the solar flares and things have gone past. You are right. We do have a fair atmosphere, and some satellites, meteors can be burned up, but by and large, there's not a whole lot to slow them down too much, and there will be chances of being hit by something, but I'm not worried about the probability of that.
Indio, California we go. Hello, J.D., take it away.
Thank you so much, George. I God bless you. And Ken, you're a good American. I mean, if you talk about a can-do attitude, I think it's all a pipe dream, to be honest with you. I can't imagine sitting in a space capsule for 7 months with three newfound friends. And, you know, even if you know geology and architecture and all this other stuff, what does that have to do with a 7.5-month flight? And my last point is, if I had to pick, I certainly wouldn't pick somebody that was married. You know, I would take somebody that had the least amount of earthly ties, the person that sold their mortgage, doesn't have any wife and kids, and can leave here without the ties that a married person has.
Almost like one of those movies where the FBI went into a prison and took certain people. He's got some good ideas here, Ken.
Well, I understand that. In fact, one of the gentlemen we were discussing that with, he said before his team would be launched, he and his wife would discuss that they would get a divorce because she's young enough.
Wow.
He says she doesn't want to live alone while he's gone. And in my case, I've been married 30 years, and my wife supports 100% my opportunity to live out my dream on Mars.
She can't wait for you to get out of the house, right?
Well,
go, Ken, go.
Talk to her privately and see what she has to say. But is your question on becoming bored, we're going to have nearly eight, 9 years of training with this team. They're going to be part family. We're going to know each other, our little quirks and all kinds of problems. Now, as far as I think that married people have developed skills of working together in a very close-knit relationship. So seeing that only single people, I think it would be more difficult on a single person than it would be on those of us that have had very successful marriages and happy lives.
I know Dr. Robin Falkov, Richard Hoagland's significant other, has donated to Mars One $1 million, so he'll go. Kidding. Just kidding.
Where can I sign up? Yeah. Where can I donate?
Let's go to the Bronx. Ronald's with us, first-time caller. Hey, Ronald, go ahead.
Hello, Maury. First-time caller, long-time listener.
Thank you.
I'm a bit. Can I speak to Ken?
You can, but your phone sounds horrible. Can you get on the phone better or what?
Yeah, I'm on the phone. This is the only phone I got.
I'll give you one real quick question. Go ahead.
All right. Ken, there's one book that you got to pick up to Mars, really. It's called "They Were Giants Upon the Earth" by Zachariah Sitchin. Please, you must read that book.
Well, you've heard of Zachariah Sitchin, Ken.
I'm very well versed with Zachariah Sitchin's writings, and I find a lot of answers, I think, that we will have either the opportunity of proving or not. And so those are some of the things that we'll be looking for. But the main thing is we're going to be studying the planet itself so that it actually, if you look at it this way, we may be creating a new Earth for people we'll be able to migrate to later on, particularly after we get it more terraformed.
How often will the Mars One group send supplies there?
Initially, whenever in between the 2 years, there will be other supply ships that will be coming in, and then the other team will show up 26 months later. So for the first few, until we are totally self-sufficient with our greenhouses, we will be getting some resupplies coming in.
This is going to be exciting. It's going to be frightening for some people in some form or fashion. But, you know, once you go, you go. How will Mars One make money doing this?
All right, that's a great question. As we said earlier, the Olympics bring in over $6 billion each time you have the Olympics, and that's through advertisements and all kinds of things. Can you imagine Microsoft touting the fact that the Microsoft Lander number one is landing on Mars, or Google's Habitat number one, or Walmart's greenhouse, or any of these big companies? Now, they would could sign on for advertisement purposes as well. And then, of course, I keep calling it Survivor type. It's the Big Brother type reality TV programs. They're going to be following us for 7.5 years with TVs and till it gets down to the last year, and then there's going to be a worldwide vote on which one of the 10 teams are going to be the ones that are going to go first.
Of course, you know reality shows, Ken. They're going to want to hear arguments in these little domes and people fighting, and that's just the way Hollywood is.
That's the way it is. I'm sure there's going to be a few disagreements, and we hope not. The way the selection goes, though, if one team member in your team bails out, they have the choice of either replacing that with a person or cutting the whole team out, gone. So there's going to be some interesting things taking place.
Will you have exercise machines and capabilities there?
During the 7.5 months, we will be required to do at least 2 hours of exercise a day in order to keep our bone mass up,
yep,
as well as keeping our strengths, you know, the way we need them. So, yes, we're going to be exercising all the time there, and I'm sure we'll have the equipment once we get on Mars.
How many hours is a Martian day?
It's slightly, I think, I don't have my notes in front of me. You got 24, it's like 26.3 hours a day. So it's slightly longer.
Yeah, that is longer. And then darkness is how long?
Half of that.
About half, just almost like us.
It is. It's so close to the Earth that it won't take but any difficulty in becoming accustomed to the day-night cycle.
What do you do if you get there and you truly see remnants of a past culture or civilization? Do you say something about it? What happens?
I think we're going to become extremely popular, being the first ones to find ancient ruins. And a lot of the things we're going to find with the geology studies as to, you know, whether it is I've seen a lot of pictures and things from Mars that have my questions about whether it's natural or it's an artifact that's been left over. Of course, we'd be looking for that. But the main thing is to study the rocks, find out the real history of Mars, and it'll reflect upon our understanding of the creation of the Earth and the whole solar system.
And what if those remnants, if they're there, might have been from us from, let's say, several million years ago?
Or a few thousand years ago.
Or a few thousand. Who knows?
Then we're going to be the first ones on the home base that's going to have access to that.
James Cameron will want to do a movie up there.
Hey, send him up on the next flight.
Let's go to Jonathan in Bakersfield, California. That's west of the Rockies. Go ahead, John.
Well, gentlemen, how you doing?
Good, Jonathan.
Very good.
Praise the Lord. Good to hear from you again, George. Listen, I have a biblical statement. I'm a repentant, Jesus name baptized, Holy Ghost-filled Christian preacher, as according to Acts 2:38. Let me ask you, how do you think the human politics will be being on a place as far away as on Mars will be between you all? Because politics change in a place like that, I'm sure of it. And two, the hemisphere, because Mars is smaller than Earth, will it be easier to see the curvature of the planet as you stand on it?
We'll be able to see the curvature on Mars because basically it'll be about 5 miles away, whereas here on the Earth you're going to have to go a good 50 miles before you really can tell that you you've crossed over the edge. But you the politics or the constitutions and things, so those are things that we're going to develop on our own when we get there. And one of the, if you go to the Mars One website and go into questions and answers, they get into a lot of discussion on religion and politics, and it's an excellent place to go and also to find out more about what we're going to be doing while we're there.
I would like to be the king if I went there.
We do not want to have any kings.
No, no kings?
No. In fact, my concern about landing as when we're ready to go outside is I hope the platform's large enough for all four of us to stand on it, and we'll jump at the same time so that no one can say, you know, Ken was the first one to step on the planet Mars. I'd rather the whole team get the credit for being the first ones, because we're all going to land together at the same time.
What do you think might be, Ken, the most unusual thing you find on Mars?
Most unusual thing would have to do with finding evidence of a prior civilization.
And you're convinced it's there, aren't you?
I'm fairly convinced that it's entirely possible. And if you get into Sitch and stuff and a few of the other writers, that there's a probability, and I think it's more positive than it is negative, but a lot depends on where we land.
Will you have laptop computers and things like that?
I hope we have a better one and a better phone than what I had earlier today. It just crapped out on me, and
really?
I couldn't get a hold of you guys.
Will you have Facebook capabilities?
We will have access to the Internet. But again, it'll be, and anything that we want can be beamed up to us. So we've already talked about that.
So I had a movie idea a long time ago. So what happens if you're all on Mars and you're looking at Earth, and Earth gets hit by a planetary killing asteroid?
A life extinction.
And then you're stuck on Mars. No more shipments, no more people. What happens?
I'm gonna go into the greenhouse and say, grow, baby, grow.
I mean, can you sustain yourself indefinitely?
That is the goal, and that's why we're going there to colonize, and that is to become totally self-sufficient over a reasonable period of time.
All right, give us the update when they select again. Would you, Ken?
Absolutely. We stay in good touch.
All right. Ken Johnson wants to go to Mars. It's a one-way trip. You never know. I'll be back in a moment, and imagine this. There is no afterlife. How do you live your life? Matthew Alpert joins us, his book, The God Part of the Brain, next on Coast to Coast AM.